Welcome to Switchblade Sisters, where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. I'm April Wolf, film critic for LA Weekly. Every week, I invite a new female filmmaker on, a writer, director, actor, producer, and we talk in depth about their fave genre film that influenced their own work. Today, I'm really excited to have on the show actor and now producer, writer, director, all of that kind of thing, Heather Matarazzo.
Hi. How are you?
Did I get it right?
You got it. That was perfect. Thank you. Thank you. I've been practicing.
I'm going to give a little intro to Heather. So for those who are not familiar, you know exactly who you're speaking with. Heather broke into indie fame when she was quite young after starring as the formidable Dawn Wiener in Todd Solondz's Welcome to the Dollhouse. The role won her an Independent Spirit Award, which is crazy. You were so young. She then went on to appear in a steady stream of movies, including The Devil's Advocate, 54, and Scream 3, before landing yet another beloved role in The Princess Diaries as the earthy, hilarious Lily Moskowitz. Next came her role in Brian Donnelly's searing religious satire Saved, followed by another Princess Diaries, and a whole host of TV appearances on everything from Roseanne and Strangers with Candy to Now and Again, The L Word, and Grey's Anatomy. She's also returned to indie film, starring in festival darlings like last year's Girl Flu. And after a lifetime in front of the camera, she's now behind it with multimedia projects like The Avant Gardener and a few others in development for her production company, Life, Death, Life. And now you can also find her in the podcast space on her show, Shut Up and Listen with Heather Matarazzo. What I love about Heather's body of work is that she's been able to exist in this place that bridges the gap between indie and commercial worlds. That's why I love that the film we'll be talking about today is none other than Karin Kusama's 2016 indie hit, The Invitation.
Something doesn't feel safe here.
We don't see you for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, we get invited to this lavish dinner. Don't tell me that this is normal.
What do you think is happening, Will?
This beautiful moment is upon us. Tonight is the night our faith is made real.
Heather, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about why you're choosing The Invitation.
Well, I am a huge fan of the writer-director, and B, I love a woman's aesthetic when it comes to filmmaking, and particularly films that are dark. I think that there's a really big misconception, even still, obviously, that individuals have about what material is quote-unquote appropriate for a director that happens to be female. And what I love about her is that she then is like, fuck this noise. I'm not only going to direct it, I'm also going to write it. And Tammy Blanchard, I feel, is one of the most underutilized actors out there. Mm. And I've always loved her work. So whenever I see that she's in something, my ears get peaked. I love a quote-unquote slow film in mm-hmm. this sense. I feel that I was just having this conversation last night with my partner, Heather Turman, who's like my partner in life and also for Life, Death, Life, our production company, and talking about how everything is so on the surface these days and everything is so one-dimensional. And a film like The Invitation, for me at least, it allows for breathing room because it respects its characters and it respects the story mm-hmm. that it's telling. So it knows that it doesn't need to rush.
Mm-hmm. And I'll give a little backstory on the story so people who haven't watched it yet or those who need a refresher can get it. And also, for those who haven't seen The Invitation, today's episode is going to give you some spoilers. Again, that should not stop you from listening before you watch. But, you know, my motto is that it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes the movie worth watching. Still, if you want to pause and watch this film first, please do.
And get popcorn.
Oh, yeah. And get popcorn. Get ready for this.
Yeah.
Directed by Karin Kusama in 2016, The Invitation begins with a sullen, bearded man named Will driving up into the Hollywood Hills with his new girlfriend, Kira. They hit a coyote. This is not a good omen. As they arrive at a house party, we slowly start to realize that this is the home of Will's ex, Eden, and her new husband, David. The two have been traveling for quite some time in Mexico and have just come back into town. And they're using it as an occasion to gather some of Will and Eden's old friends for dinner. The thing is, absolutely nothing seems right at this house the second that they get there. David keeps locking the doors with a key and then gaslighting people when they complain. Eden's so on edge that she's got 1 foot over the cliff already. And Will's getting some serious flashbacks of his dead son. It's not a great time to be at a party. Kira and their friends mostly play off the awkwardness like any Angelina would. Oh, so they're weird. Everyone is weird. But when Eden and David's new friend Pruitt shows up, tensions rise. Who is Pruitt? What is his purpose? The trio forces everyone to watch a suicide video, which leads to one of the most uncomfortable scenes committed to film. We know something is going to happen, but we don't know how or when. And Kusama waits until the last 20 minutes of this film to announce that it is, unmistakably, a horror film. I would love to ask you, are you a horror film fan?
Absolutely not.
I gathered this, and that's why I was really excited that, you know, this is a film that's still connected with you.
Yeah. It's a horror film that is so realistic. That's what makes it horrifying. And mm-hmm. and that's what I feel sets this apart, is that, oh, I could see this happening.
Yeah, definitely. I think also that may have to do with it being set in Los Angeles, too. These characters are a little bit kind of out there, but they're still... there's still people I might meet at a party here.
Oh yeah, and I wouldn't put it past anybody in Los Angeles to engage in this sort of behavior.
So last year, when the film had come out, I had actually talked to Karin Kusama about the origin of this story, and she was talking about how being in Hollywood after Girl Fight had come out, and she was making Aeon Flux. That she went to this party and it was just the worst. And it was an industry party, which I'm sure you have been to many of these. But she realized about halfway through the party, like, that she was the only woman who was there as a guest.
Mm.
And that everyone else was just kind of scantily clad women who were handing out drinks or mm-hmm. hors d'oeuvres.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really kind of strange point for her, where it was one of those parties where she wanted to leave and she should have left, but she did not, because, you know, the politesse, you know, like you want to be polite and this is your industry and you don't want to be judgy or something. And so she stayed, and that's one kernel. There's a few different kernels, but that one really struck with me. I was just like, ah.
And that, I think, speaks to a much bigger thing, especially in the wake of everything that is finally coming out regarding Weinstein and the nature of this business. In regards to things like industry parties where you can choke on Axe body spray, you know, and choke on the toxic masculinity that is so prevalent in that room, and that idea that you have to, quote unquote, play the game, especially when you're just starting out or just in that kind of beginning to middle phase of one's career.
This part, for, I don't know how you feel about this, but I love John Carroll Lynch in this movie
mm-hmm.
to the heavens, just as a general actor who is a great character actor and can jump into anything. And so I've been thinking a little bit about him and the fact that when Phil Hay, Karin Kusama's husband, and Matt Manfredi had drafted the script for Karin, and she knew that she wanted to have John Carroll Lynch be this character.
Yeah.
It was really interesting experience for him because someone was writing a part for him. I'm wondering, has anyone ever written a part specifically for you, thinking that that's what you are?
Ash Christian had written a part for me in a dark comedy he was going to be directing called Mangus. And the character's name was Jessica Simpson, and she was white trash and really funny.
You're like, yes, that's me.
Like,
I get this.
I absolutely was like, yes, I can do this. And I'm trying to think if there, and then also was Saved, mm-hmm. you know, but that was like a bit of a different story.
I mean, Saved is also very funny, so you get to be comedic in these.
Well, the story behind Saved is this, is that I was originally going to be playing Cassandra.
Mm-hmm.
That was Eva Marie. ended up playing. And I had been attached to that film for 2 years. I was the one that brought on Mandy Moore. And we were getting ready to shoot. We were going to be shooting down in Florida in like 2 weeks. And I was really excited to fucking play Cassandra because, like, talk about fucking layers and vulnerability and not giving a fuck and being strong. Just very multidimensional. And I was like, I'm so grateful because now people are actually going to get to see me in a different way. And there is something to be said when a director slash writer is able to see you the way that you see you in terms of being capable of a lot more than most others would assume that you're capable of. But then 2 weeks before we started shooting, standing in Starbucks, the director was acting weird. And I was like, what's up? He was like, nothing. I was like, what's up? Something's going on. And he said, We're going to give another actor the role of Cassandra. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we're 2 weeks away from shooting. What's happening? I've been with this for 2 years. And he was like, well, the producers say that you're not fuckable. Yeah. And he was like, but I still really want you in this movie. And there's a role of Tia who, you know, isn't as big, but like, I'm going to meet her up for you. And I like remember feeling so many different things in that moment, but I don't want to say I reluctantly said yes, but like I guess, you know, like I reluctantly said yes. And I'm grateful that I did it. I'm grateful that I got to be a part of it and I got to learn incredible lessons on that show and about who I am. And it served as a really great teaching moment. But, you know, that's why, like, I really desired to start my production company. It's because if I can't have control over the narrative as an actor in terms of how people see me, I sure as fuck can have it behind the camera.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Switchblade Sisters.
Hey, everyone. Freddie Wong.
Matt Arnold.
And Will Campos.
Here to tell you about Story Break, a writer's room podcast where every week we, the Hollywood geniuses behind Video Game High School, have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Thrill as we weave the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
We're going to double down on everything that made the prequels great. Jar Jar, Trade Federation, politics.
Gasp as we assemble a pantheon of heroes for the Kellogg Cinematic Universe.
We could get rid of Snap, Crackle, Pop. I won't even miss them.
You're crazy.
They die in the second. Act.
Oh, come on!
And join us as we make fun of Matt as he struggles to name a single Beyonce song.
Well, yeah, put a finger on it. Sure, she wants to be Beyonce.
Put a finger on it. Beyonce is the famous song.
Will we break the story?
Or will the story break us?
Find out by joining us in the writer's room every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm April Wolf, and you're listening to Switchblade Sisters. Our guest today is actress and director Heather Matarazzo. We were just talking about crafting a career in the film industry. That's one of the things I wanted to get into is because you had started so early. And I also think about Karin Kusama starting out early with Michelle Rodriguez, you know, and you have these like a young director and a young actor and they're trying to find their language and how they speak to one another. And Karin said it took a really long time. And then once they figured out how she's supposed to talk to her, it all fell into place. It made sense. You know, like this is the way that she's going to speak to all actors, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering your experience with Todd Solondz on set, you know, was that formative in how you figured out how to get a director to speak to you? Did you figure it out later on?
No, I mean, well, here's the thing, right? There's this really interesting book, which is called The Five Love Languages.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, my husband loves it.
It's so like some it's like praise and affirmation, some it's gifts, some it's like time, and some it's service, like whatever the fuck. But like with Todd in particular, there really wasn't a quote-unquote verbal language. You know, it was really just soft mumbling. And we just intuitively understood because he trusted me as an actor to give voice and give life to Dawn. So I'm grateful that 99% of the directors that I've worked with, I've been able to have a very intuitive, connective language with, mm-hmm. where not a lot of words need to be spoken.
If I'm thinking about the invitation, mm-hmm. and what Karin has said about the set, mm-hmm. it seems like, and the way that she directs her sets, mm-hmm. I think that sometimes you can see that in what it felt like behind the scenes on the screen. Mm-hmm. And in the invitation, you hear all these actor interviews and they love the experience.
Yeah.
And they felt like they were nurtured and, mm-hmm. and that they were taken care of. Mm-hmm. And, that's the way that Karin kind of chooses to run her sets.
Yeah.
And the way that she also ran the set is that she had 3 days of rehearsals, mm-hmm. 3 days straight of rehearsals, mm-hmm. which, again, I've talked about this before, where that's such a luxury. Sometimes it's only afforded on, not by money, but by just people who are really into an independent film, mm-hmm. who, these actors who want to take the time, yeah. to do it, to get,
yeah.
it right.
Yeah.
Have you had any sets before where you've been able to do these in-depth rehearsals or?
Yeah. And I love it. I mean, it's not so much, not so much anymore. And that's something that I'm really getting to look forward to on the other side of that. Depending on the story, depending on the relationships, depending on the dynamics, sometimes rehearsal is really necessary. And other times there can be too much of, I feel like, an analytical approach to a story and the deconstruction of a character that takes away, it deflates a natural intuitive rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of differences and I think varieties in terms of rehearsal and what that looks like and how much does the director trust their actors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing that I love about the invitation in terms of its quietness.
Yeah.
Is that I could see at least that she really trusted her actors,
mm-hmm.
and she let them have enough room with which to breathe,
mm-hmm.
and because everybody was there for the same purpose, which was to bring to life this story that she had created,
mm-hmm.
and when you have a director that trusts and isn't in fear, that allows for the actors to feel comfortable taking more quote unquote risks, because it allows them to lose themselves to a certain degree, like within the characters that they're playing,
mm-hmm.
So
one of my favorite parts of this has to be Pruitt's monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of my reasons for that is, he's telling, this is when he, is just like, I want to tell you about my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he, says, I killed her.
I went to pour myself another drink. She tried to stop me, and something just gave. I turned and hit her as hard as I could. Her knees buckled. She hit her head. I think she was trying to get back up. She had her hand out, staring at me. And then she collapsed and she was gone.
It's a really long, long bit of text. But the way that Karin frames it is she kind of goes around and she's, artfully finding these reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, these actors get to, their physical and their, their expressions. It's
they're
so
present.
Important. They're so, yeah, exactly. They're so present in it. It almost feels like you do feel like they've known each other forever. They do, and they apparently used to play, like, whenever they would rap or whenever they would take a break or anything, none of them left the house. They all just hung out together,
yeah.
on the set. They didn't,
yeah.
leave.
Yeah.
So they were like staying in this kind of warm kind of cocoon of,
yeah.
Yeah.
That is everything. You know, I mean, all I can tell you is this. The experiences that I've had where, you know, you're talking about coverage, right?
Yeah.
And getting reaction shots, especially when you're dealing with a character that has a long bit of text. I had an experience once where the actor had a long bit of text,
mm-hmm.
Which I was there for. I wasn't on camera. It was their close-up. But I was there.
Yeah.
Cut to, they're reversing on me for my reaction, listening to what the main character is saying. And the actor wasn't the one that recited those lines. It was the second AD.
Well, how are you supposed to react in that?
Because you know why? I'm that goddamn good. That's why. You know, like, because I am that good and I won't apologize for it. Some actors are really fucking selfish. And some actors are not about the connection. And with that, getting to, I learned that lesson pretty early, where I owe it to my character to be present within those feelings, you know, that my ability to connect with the character is infinitely enhanced when I'm able to connect with the other actor.
I want to go back now to, you had originally said that you wanted to see anything that Tammy Blanchard was in.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about, you know, her character and why you love this in particular?
Well, you know, Tammy is really interesting as an actor. Getting to see her in something like The Invitation, where,
I mean, she's off kilter. There is something weird about her body, everything about her.
Everything about her, because she's so conscious and aware, you know. And I feel like when you get to have the experience of having a writer or director see you,
mm-hmm.
and see that you're capable of so much more, it's not something that you take for granted. And so in this role, I got to see a side of her that I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, a million sides. I mean, like, she traverses the emotions, you know, from just like extreme happiness to anger, like in a second.
But with that too, right? And so what you're saying, because like the truth is that she's playing a whole entire human being.
Sure.
She's playing a whole human being who has been absolutely fucking fractured by the loss of her son and is so desperate to find salvation from her grief and her misery.
I was just telling Will that pain is optional.
It is? Why didn't anyone tell me that before now?
I know, but it's actually really simple. All those negative emotions, grief, anger, depression, it's all just chemical reactions. It's entirely physical, and it's completely changeable.
Kind of sound like a pamphlet there.
You can actually expel those emotions from your body and live the life you want to live.
Her emotions in terms of happiness, just underneath the surface, I saw an animal that was cornered.
Yeah, she's like that coyote.
And yeah, exactly like that fucking coyote.
That's like the first thing I was just like, oh, she's the coyote. We need to put her out of her misery because this is not okay. She's not okay. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Switchblade Sisters.
Hello, I'm Carrie Poppy.
And I'm Ross Blotcher, hosts of MaximumFun.org's Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
We wanted to tell you the good news that our podcast is now weekly.
Yeah, weekly. On Oh No, Ross and Carrie, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments and report our findings to you.
In a time where alternative facts reign supreme, we cut through the murky spin to give you the real deal on topics like UFOs, the ETI vaccination movement, Scientology, and even apocalyptic churches.
We're even undercover for some very exciting investigations right now.
Well, not right now, right now.
Yeah, that would be unwise.
That's Oh No, Ross and Carrie at MaximumFun.org.
We show up so you don't have to.
And welcome back. I'm April Wolf. My guest today is actress and director Heather Matarazzo, and we're talking about the 2015 Karin Kusama film, The Invitation. Heather, we were actually just talking about Tammy Blanchard in the film. This was clearly her character was brought out in these rehearsals, because everything that I've heard from interviews is that the script left openings. It told you who these characters were, but it left openings for these actors. Mm-hmm. And I know that Logan Marshall Green, when he was interviewed, he said, it's about time we start treating our audience as intelligent individuals. We don't need to be spoon-fed narrative or character. And he's, thinking like these really subtle things, I think, that tell you so much about a character, and even just really concrete things. Like, we don't need to know that Miguel is a doctor, because at the end, he immediately goes into action. And also, Emiyatsi Corinaldi's character, she is clearly a medical professional, too. Like, we don't need to have that conversation. We don't need to do that. You get to see it from their actions, how they do something. It's really phenomenal.
And even like the moment with the pill, where he's like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
And so that informs the audience in a way. And with that, too, I think that there's something to be said about just poorly fucking executed exposition. It makes me want to set myself on fire.
Well, it's wonderful, because they did, Phil Hay, Matt Manfredi, and Karin, they all had multiple pages of some expositional things in the scene, but they, through cutting it together, they were like, no, actually, we don't need any of this. They sliced it down. I think the script was 96 pages to start, and then they sliced it down even further in the edit.
Yeah.
And they wanted to trust people. They made that really conscious decision, which is phenomenal filmmaking. That's where the good filmmakers lie,
Well, yeah, and also it's not only trusting the audience, but trusting the story and trusting the characters.
Mm-hmm. And I think this one, I it hits so hard. There are a lot of women in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great to see an ensemble cast that has a lot of women, that has an interracial gay couple,
mm-hmm.
that has an interracial couple,
mm-hmm.
and it is somewhat unusual to have in multiple interracial couples in a film, mm-hmm. not in real life, but in a film, strangely enough. And so she knew that she would get some kind of reaction about that, and she was welcoming of it. She said, yeah, let's bring it on, which I found fantastic in a way. And it's a way that other people can connect to. There is a gay man who survives,
mm-hmm.
and that never happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no lesbian. There's always the thing where the lesbians die.
That is very true. It's so interesting, right? These past few years for me, in regards to getting to unpack my own internalized biases and racism and sexism and misogyny and homophobia, because we bring with us an entire history, mm-hmm. of who we are. And so I really do think that there is something to be said about, I'm not going to whitewash my film. We're not going to rely upon the stereotypes that have been so prevalent. And I feel like it's, at least for me as a filmmaker and a storyteller, every single script that I read, unless the character description says Black, Asian, gay,
yeah,
whatevs, the obvious default is straight and white.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting, the difference. If you're working to write a script for the studio, I think that you probably should put in these descriptors if you would like to have some kind of multicultural, mm-hmm. cast, mm-hmm. in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're living in a time where it seems ridiculous that you wouldn't have one gay character, at least, in, an ensemble story, for instance.
Yeah.
Because the odds of having a gay friend, mm-hmm. in those instances is really high. But, for Karin Kusama, it goes back to her owning the story with Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi, that they made this, they owned it, and they were able to follow through with, what they wanted. And that's the indie spirit. And one of the reasons why this indie film got big. You know, you commit something that you believe in to film, and it will find a connection out there.
Yeah, well, look at Moonlight, look at Get Out, look at Lion. But there's like tokenism, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like we've filled the diversity gap for this movie, and like as opposed to like with somebody like Lisa Cholodenko, who I love. You know, The Kids Are All Right. Part of the reason that I was such a big fan was because it was a story about a marriage, and the marriage just happened to be about two women. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't the quote unquote centerpiece.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, you have to explain gayness and make it about being gay instead of being about a marriage. Like, yeah. That's what most people would attempt to do, I think.
Yeah.
And again, and then The Invitation, there's no explanation needed.
Exactly.
We don't need to care like that this is an interracial couple, and we don't need to care that
because
this is
a gay couple.
It's not the movie.
That's not the movie at all. And there's something to be said about like that shot of his girlfriend when he first leaves, and it's literally a profile shot of her, and it's a single, and you just see her alone on the couch with her head down.
Yeah.
And the first thing that I thought of was, wow, look at how much she is having to carry within this moment. I think particularly regarding like women of color, all that comes with that, especially when you're continually habitating a white space.
Sure.
You know, and there's nothing more white to me than getting to become a part of a fucked up cult.
Yeah. No, that's the...
like, that's white privilege in action.
And then she gets stuck in this white person's cult. And it's just, like, another thing where, like, she's got to fight to survive. Which I have to say that I was like, please let her live. Please let her live.
Yeah.
And then when she fights and she lives and she is, you know, the person who says no, I'm like, mm-hmm. yes, thank you. Thank you, Karin, for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And she gets to be violent, too. And before we go, I want to touch on one last thing about violence in this film. Violence
yes.
in women.
Yes.
Give me more.
I know.
Karin Kusama said, people always ask what makes you different as a woman director, which is almost absolutely nothing. But when I think of the perspective of women's consciousness, I realize it must be violence. So frequently, violence is depicted against us. We're the first to go, the holy grail of war crimes, the starting line of how to exact revenge. It's hard not to be, in my mind, a woman and not be kind of obsessed with violence. You know, and I find myself having to defend this, you know, as a fan of genre films and particularly horror, and having grown up watching them, and I watched them specifically because it was the only place that I would find outside of soap operas that women would be the leads in the film.
Mm-hmm.
It would be their story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also felt in my life that violence is around me constantly. I mm-hmm. think about it all the time because I'm wary of it, and I need to be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, watching this violence on screen,
mm-hmm.
it gives me some kind of cathartic experience. Sometimes I don't even know how to describe it, but it's on my mind constantly,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm drawn to it in mm-hmm. some way. So are you drawn to this violence in this film? Is it different in this film than it is in others?
I think so. In the sense of men are the catalyst of the violence
mm-hmm.
in this in particular instance. I'm much more interested in getting to explore violence within women.
Mm-hmm.
I have the capacity for murder.
I
know that. And I feel that women are often subjugating to being forced to apologize
mm-hmm.
or they have to get pushed to such a breaking point that then they go into violence as opposed to knowing anything about the history of women and all we've had to carry, because that deconstructs the straight white patriarchal view of how a woman should be and who a woman should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like while I do appreciate the violence in the film, I think there's also something to be said about women being violent against other women. mm-hmm. as opposed to women just being violent against men. And that women are, especially if they are depicted as violent in film, they're the ones that are considered crazy mm-hmm. that need to be put down.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us talking about The Invitation. And I want to thank our producer, Casey O'Brien. Next week, we're going to be talking with director Issa Lopez, where we will be discussing her most recent film, Tigers Are Not Afraid, and Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth. Switchblade Sisters is a production of MaximumFun.org. Thanks, guys.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.